This is Roots Pod.
Let's see if they can find something on this set piece. Oh, look at that! And listen to the crowd!
Oakland Roots Sports Club 1, San Antonio FC 2. Welcome into Roots Pod. This is Aaron. I'm back after a week hiatus, and I'm joined by John and Peter and special guest Ivan, whose work I'm sure you've seen on the blog, who's is probably the most knowledgeable here, the best writer. We have to sort of limit what he does so the rest of us don't feel bad. And I think he's also a better podcaster than the rest of us. So hopefully he can bring the level of discourse on this one up just slightly. Although, as you know, Ivan, we are proud of the garbage we spew here. So
absolutely, as you should be.
Thank you. Thank you. I'd call it some good and mostly bad from this last match. Justin Rasmussen's 7th-minute bicycle kick equalized at that point. Unbelievable. Already they were down 1-0 after 5 minutes. And the Roots couldn't get on the scoreboard again, but San Antonio did through Luke Haakonsen in the 69th minute. Roots fall to 0-0-3 on the season, which is precisely the opposite, I think, of what they were aiming for. The atmosphere was pretty good. The fact that nearly 27,000 people were there, that's pretty good. That goal was pretty cool. And that's pretty much it, I think. Am I missing anything on the pros?
Too short.
Oh, yes, too short. I guess I'd sort of rolled him into the atmosphere part. But, he in particular.
He had a hell of a performance. Best performance, 10 out of 10.
I saw that you gave him a 10.
It was better than I expected it to be.
Yeah. Kept some of the Hayward vibes where he was just on the pitch, not a platform, not one of the leftover bases from the A's from the stand on.
All right. So, Peter, I know that one of your reactions was, even though it's the third straight loss, the Roots were kind of unlucky here. San Antonio might not have deserved a second goal. I don't know how we feel exactly about how the game was reffed, but you thought like the Roots probably deserved something out of this game, all things considered.
Well, I mean, that's what the XG says. You know, that my reaction was based on seeing, I don't know, some stats company's XG assessment of the game, which said 0.6 basically for each team, you know, a 0.01 difference between the teams. And I don't think that that's totally... That didn't strike me as wrong as I left the game. You know, looking back, I do think that San Antonio had some other chances too, and maybe more than the Roots did, but they may not have been as good chances as they felt in the moment. You know, your heart goes into your mouth as soon as they take the ball into your penalty area. But that doesn't always mean that it was a good chance. So I think that the Roots probably did get a little unlucky here. But maybe not all that unlucky. You know, the defense was really questionable on both of the goals that were conceded, and they just don't feel like the actual goals conceded weren't bad luck. They were bad play.
Does that sound reasonable to you, Ivan? Is that did you think the Roots were unlucky, or was this a deserved loss?
The first goal that was conceded was more vivid in my memory because of how poor it was. I felt like San Antonio just flipped the switch and be like, okay, we're just going to attack now. Almost like a FIFA kickoff glitch kind of situation. It felt like since it was the 5th minute, they sliced apart the defense and it was just felt too easy for that first goal in particular. Alex Grieve from New Zealand putting San Antonio up for all of 2 minutes. Of course, we got the instant response, which was great. That's all you could ask for when you go down early, is like try to get a goal earlier, at least minimize the damage, in which case the Roots succeed in both. But and then in the 68th, 69th minute, it was more of the same from San Antonio. I felt like they were able to build up so easily. And that's a pattern that I've seen a lot with the Roots, particularly last season, but in patches throughout my time following this team, is that a lot of these better teams from the USL, granted San Antonio, they missed the playoffs last season, but they've won a championship. They're a respected team in this league, that those types of teams, they're able to do the basics a bit more effortlessly, and for the Roots to carve out chances and to get into the dangerous areas of their opponents third feels like it's a mountain to climb.
Yeah, I got to agree with the goals there, especially that first one. That first one, you watch it on replay and it just leaves a sour taste. I mean, Mitch Tainter has all the time in the world to send a long ball, and you'll be sitting there watching it, watching the replay or the highlight reel, you know, either one. And it's like you ask, like I was watching the game with Steve and we're like, is this a free kick? Like, what's happening here? He just has all the time in the world. No one is pressing him. You know, Armanakis is just looking at him. Everybody's just looking at Tainter. And he just unloads a long pass across the field to Alex or whoever sent the pass to Alex Grieve, I think. I mean, it was just way, way, way too easy. And then the next goal, and I think this is where I can agree where you know, maybe it was a lucky goal. I mean, just a header through into the back line. But even at that point, you know, Hackshaw is two steps behind the guy. The goal scorer, Hackinson, is one-on-one with Abdi Mohamed, just holding him off, just bodying him, just, you know, boxing him out completely. It looked like, you know, Steph Curry trying to go up against a center for a rebound, and it's just so easy for him, just a loft over McIntosh. I mean, it was both goals were just too easy. So I mean, and then for Roots side, you know, they have some moments, but they still haven't produced double digit shot attempts. They've had 7, 6, and 6 with shot attempts. And then I'm not sure about shots on target, but it might have been, what, 2 for this last one and then 2 for the one before. So, I mean, they're not creating. There was one big chance missed from EJ Johnson at the end. And this was, you know, a great play where Justin Rasmussen sends a ball across on the first touch, receives a long ball, sends the pass into Johnson on the first touch. Johnson's shot goes high, but everybody in the stadium, I mean, it sounded like to me, everybody thought it was a penalty. I've heard a lot of people saying, you know, that's a penalty. It's hard to say. It was a really close call, but the slide came in through Johnson's back. So, you know, if it is a penalty, then that's pretty justified. I think that would have been actually the easier call to make in that situation, but we don't have VAR at this level yet. So, I mean, that's what I want to see, is just more opportunities. And, you know, we go back to the bicycle kick goal, and it's just another moment of just individual brilliance. And I've seen our friend of the blog, Tommy Hodul, he posted on Twitter that, you know, do Roots have more bicycle kick goals than any other team? And it's like, yeah, that might be true, but it's also might be a product of the situation where a lot of these chances throughout the years that this team has been able to make have been a product of individual brilliance. It's hard to pinpoint a single goal and be like, that was a system goal. You know, that was a Gavin Glinton goal. That was a Noah Delgado goal. And I really want to see some semblances of a system that's working, you know, going forward pretty soon. I think we have an idea of what Glinton wants to do. It's just a matter of executing it, and they just haven't really been able to do that yet.
Yeah, I think that there has been some difficulty settling the offense in, because there have been so many changes week to week by necessity. You know, guys weren't ready and they have still, you know, more or less produced. They have 5 goals in 3 games, which is a good, you know, if we average 5 goals for every 3 games this season, I think it's unlikely we miss the playoffs. You know,
that would be by far the Roots' best output in their USL history. Yeah,
for sure. And, you know, I don't think that the defense is as bad as the goals conceded suggests. And in fact, you know, we're trending towards never conceding again. You know, we're going to concede 1 next week and that's it. That's it for the season. But I think that, it, you know, unfortunate reality of running into this defensive buzzsaw in game 3 is that we're finally seeing sort of the planned offensive starters or some of the planned offensive starters. It's like we run Peter Wilson out there for his first start against a team that may never concede again this year and has not conceded in its first 2 games. And it's like, well, of course he doesn't look that good. And I think that, you know, and that was my takeaway from the last 20 minutes as well. In the stadium, I was livid because it looked like the last 20 minutes against Monterrey, which is that we're chasing, the other team knows that we're chasing, and we're not doing anything. And it's concerning that it happened against Monterrey, although Monterrey appear to be better than maybe we expected them to be. But really, I think that there is every reason to believe that it was not a total lack of creativity, but just the fact that San Antonio is going to do this to everyone all year long. That it looks like a lack of creativity when it's like they're really good at marking their men. They're really good at cutting out the long balls or forcing you into the passes that aren't going to work and whatever. What do you think, Ivan?
To add to the concern, when you needed a jolt, you have quality players coming in as subs, Sinisterra and Dem. And we're hoping that in an ideal world, Sinisterra can start more games than come as a sub because we know how talented he is and what he brings to the table, being able to unlock defenses, which few players currently on this Roots roster have that capability, but yet there's still a lack of execution in the final third, misplaced passes, and then giving the ball up cheaply, and that results in fouls, that results in yellow cards. It was just, it felt like one of those games, like as much as you were hoping that we would walk out of the Coliseum 2-2, it was more hope than expectation.
I didn't like Sinisterra coming on as a sub. And, you know, given how he has performed through the first 2 weeks, I have to assume that there was a reason, you know, that it was either fitness, that Gavin's trying to not throw these guys straight into 90 minutes every week right off the bat, or like he was trying to line up more defensively against a team that he thinks is going to be really good. But I just felt like it was almost wasted that in the long stretch of the game that was 1-1, when the teams were both going for it, they're being a little cagey, we would have really benefited from Sinisterra's creativity. And then he comes on when we're down and San Antonio is just sitting back. And they're like, you do whatever fancy moves you want. We're just going to prevent you from getting into the box. And did. And I thought that was frustrating. On the question of subs, you know, I thought Jürgen Damm looked really good for like 5 minutes after he came on and then he disappeared. And I don't know if that was, you know, again, if that's just San Antonio stifling defense, but Damm was on for 26 minutes. He had 11 touches and he completed 2 of his 6 passes. And that's like, we're bringing him on as like a super sub. He's like our big offseason signing. And he just, I don't know if he's not ready or if it was San Antonio's defense, but like that can't be what we get from Jürgen Damm this year. It just like we need more than that.
I didn't hate how Damm performed in his limited time. I mean, I felt like it actually gave me some optimism to see him in the future. I mean, he came on and in 1 minute, he had a shot on target. I think it was the only shot on target in the second half. So I felt that was encouraging. I mean, limited body of work, but yeah, you know, to your point, we got to see what he looks like for a full game and more than just 15, 20 minutes. I mean, yeah, he was that big off-season signing. I mean, he was, you know, supposedly one of the fastest players in Mexico at one point. I mean, you look at the field we're playing on, we're got, I think, the largest field width-wise in the USL. I mean, it's an opportunity to take advantage of the speed that you have on this roster that they have put together with Dom, Johnson, Wilson, so on and so forth. So, I mean, I liked what I saw in that limited amount of time from Dom. I liked that he wasted no time getting a shot on target. Yeah, we have to see more of him, but I felt, you know, some optimism with what he came in and did.
And at least Glinton is using all his options available to him. I mean, looking at the bench, unless you're trying to look for something from 19-year-old Ali Masnawi, all the offensive players and even the offensive-minded defenders from the bench made it onto the field. So you can't fault Glinton for using everything he can to try to affect the match. But maybe that says something about, you know, where are we going to find these answers from?
Well, and I think they're not who I want to – they're not necessarily who I want to start throughout the season. But I have to say, you know, this is the biggest stage that many of these guys have played on, even a bunch of the USL veterans. It's a huge stadium. It's a stadium that hosted an NFL and an MLB team, right? Okay. But for guys like Wolfgang Prentice and Ilya Alexeev, this is like really, you know, who are new to being professionals, period. And I don't, you know, neither of them had great games, but neither of them looked overwhelmed. Neither of them looked like someone who didn't deserve to be there. And I think that's huge. I don't know that they're who I picked to start in this game, but I thought they acquitted themselves well. And I have, you know, like overall, I would say that their performance was good. And I think that that's great. You know, I think that that's a really positive sign for those two guys.
I like what I saw from Prentice in particular. I think he set a solid tone in terms of being able to be a two-way player. He was able to get some good touches offensively, but also before the goal that was conceded in the fifth minute, he prevented a similar attack from transpiring into something that could have been a goal as well. So I think that the time that he spent away on loan, he's really worked hard, buckled down, and now he has this opportunity where he's not just involved in the Oakland Roots, but he's getting starts that you can see that he's motivated.
So that's a lot of discussion about the offense, but I mean, the defense is really what has been the issue, I think, in the first three games, right? I mean, the Roots are giving up three goals a game. Now, as Peter said, the trajectory is pretty positive. We might nearly have given up all of their goals for the entire season. But in the unlikely event that's not true, I feel like the Roots are going to have to find some way to give up fewer than three goals a game over the rest of the season. And I guess I'm having a hard time formulating a question here because I'm not exactly sure what the issue is, but they shouldn't be giving up three goals a game. I know that much.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. They are trending downward. Yeah, gave up two goals this game after giving up three the last one. So maybe give up one this next game. But, you know, they are – it's peculiar because, you know, Camden Riley appears again at the right back spot. What is the plan for him? You know, what should we expect to see him at that position more? I mean, he didn't have a terrible game this last game, but yeah, the issue seems to be just keeping, you know, goals out of the net. I mean, Hackshaw and Kai have had some up and down moments. Is Julian Bravo the next starter at the center back spot? We also heard he can line up at left back, but I mean, Rasmussen may not be the best defender, but he sure does produce at that wing spot. Right
now, I don't think you can take him
out.
Yeah, right?
I mean, that pass to Johnson, I mean, maybe we didn't sell it highly enough, but for me, it happened right in front of me. I mean, that was talented. I mean, to take that pass on the first touch, to send it on the button to EJ there, I mean, bravo. But the topic is defense. We have to figure out defense. You know, 9 goals through 3 games is not good. What did Gavin have to say? He said that they've talked about taking plays off for some of the goals that we've given up. I mean, that was a little tough to hear, knowing that he said almost the same thing after the 5-0 loss against Birmingham to end last season. And when I think of that comment, I think that first goal where no one is pressing Mitch Tainter to a difficult decision, and he just sends a bomb Hail Mary on, you know, having all the time in the world to make the pass. So why is there that effort thing still going on?
On the Mitch Tainter goal, I mean, or not on the goal you've been referencing, I mean, Tainter has all the time in the world. And I don't know if that's where the defense is falling down there, because, you know, very few teams press all the time. You know, you decide when you're going to press. And Tainter, yeah, they could have maybe closed him down, but he plays this kind of risky long ball, and it's not necessarily going to amount to something. What kind of confuses me is why, when that happens, Rasmussen is 20 yards off his man. And like, if you're going to give this guy all the time in the world, you should be playing really tight defense or a really good offsides trap, right? I mean, that's the idea, and they fail at both, and then Rasmussen can't recover. And, you know, I think that a lot of that goal is on him, which I feel better saying, because he also, you know, made up for his mistake 3 minutes later. One of the things that's kind of stressed me out is I feel like Kai Green's man has scored a lot of the goals so far. And Green was brought in, you know, he was brought into the team as a starter. He started every game. He was a good defender for Monterey Bay. And I don't know that I do a great job necessarily of assessing who has made the mistake. You know, if Hackshaw loses his man so badly that Green is running over to try to cover for it and can't get there in time, that wasn't actually Green's mistake, right? That was Hackshaw's mistake. And there are times that I wonder if that's actually what's going on. But nonetheless, I have noticed that a lot of the goals the Roots have conceded this season so far have come from the guy that Green is standing right next to. I've also noticed a lot of goals where it seems like Hackshaw is a complete passenger, that the play has moved beyond him and he is standing there or trying to get running when it is far too late. And both of those things are really concerning. I feel like it's the center backs. They're losing their men. And the outside backs as well. The outside backs are losing their men when it means that they're getting beat down the flank and there is an uncontested ball into the box that sometimes we're getting punished for and sometimes we're not. So that's what I've observed. You know, I don't want to put the blame all on one person when I feel like there's a lot that I'm just not seeing there, but that is what I am seeing, and it's worrying. And I don't know where the defensive improvement is going to come from.
Well, does it come from the offense? Does it come from more aggressive pressing at the front? I mean, to go back to this first goal against San Antonio, right, John, you said it earlier, it felt like it was essentially a free kick. And I complained about this a lot 2 years ago and down the stretch last year, but it often looked like there was a total disconnect between the forwards. The defenders were playing as if they expected the forwards to be pressing, and the forwards were not always pressing. And it killed the Roots down the stretch in Noah Delgado's full season in charge. I think it nearly killed them last year. Are we already seeing that again? I mean, it seems since we're not rotating these guys at the base of the midfield and in defense that much, right? I mean, that seems like a sign that this is who we're going to roll with. And if this is who we're going to roll with, presumably it's because Gavin has some amount of trust in them. And if they're in situations where they're getting beat and balls are making it through, I mean, how much do we need to look at what's happening further forward?
With going forward, when you can only score one goal from a worldie and you can't generate double-digit shots, it provides a very limited margin for error. And San Antonio were just a very difficult opponent to beat with the performance that Oakland Roots were going to have. And it doesn't get any easier when the next team coming into the Coliseum is Las Vegas Lights. They made it to the semifinals of the playoffs. Their goal scorers in their last game, a 3-2 loss to New Mexico. One has three caps for the U.S. men's national team. And the other, we all know who that player is.
Let's not go there. Yeah. Let's not go there just yet.
Not just yet. And because of the nature of the offensive struggles, then you're asking a defense that conceded 4 and 3 goals in the last two games to pitch a shutout. So the one thing that could change in terms of personnel is you have Gagi Margavashvili, who he's very experienced. He had some ups and downs last season, but he can, substitute for Kai Green. But I think you do have to look at the performances elsewhere, including the attack, and try to figure out, okay, everything is not quite clicking like we think it is.
Yeah, interesting shout on Gagi there. I brought this up to the boys. I mean, like, we haven't seen him, didn't see him at all. I don't think we saw him against Monterey either. I mean, is Gavin cold on Gagi? Has the page turned already? He is a right back. He had some good right-sided center back who lined up at right back on occasion. Had some good moments pressing forward. I mean, and I think of what Gavin's system is trying to deploy is something that is more defensively solid. You see how they are trailing in the possession time for, I think, every game so far this season. And in the games that Roots were better at last season, they trailed in possession. I mean, I think what Gavin wants to apply here is a team that can cause teams to dribble into traps and start counterattacks and, through balls and long balls up to Peter Wilson and, whoever's on the wing. It requires a lot of defensive fluidity and, yes, fluidity with the offense and the counter press. Some of the comments from Rasmussen in the press conference talked about, when we talked about what could change, why this is happening. He goes, it's not just a defensive thing. It's an offensive thing too. It's everybody playing as a cohesive unit. And I think that kind of points to, yeah, they need to also have some counter press in the front. I mean, we look at a lot of the metrics involved with some of the players that they signed. And one of the things I found were the increase in winning possession in the final third. And, I think for Gavin's system to be successful, it has to be more defensive sound and it has to be a cohesive unit that they just aren't there yet. The lines are wide, balls are getting through, and it just doesn't have the semblance of, the system that he wants. And I think the signs of that will be more frequent counterattacks, more frequent quick changes of possession and recovery, somewhere around midfield. So I think, yeah, it is a complete thing. It's not just defense. It's also the counter press from the offense. And we're just not seeing that yet.
I think there are signs. I mean, the Armanakis to Prentice goal against Orange County looked rehearsed, and I think that that's what they're trying to do. And I think I saw more life from Gibson and Gomez forcing turnovers and springing attacks this week than I did the weeks before. It didn't work a ton. And for most of the game, San Antonio was not interested in allowing that to happen. Even when it was 1-1, we struggled to make that happen. I think San Antonio's midfield is pretty good. And then certainly once we were chasing, there just weren't counterattacking opportunities, really. I think that there's movement in the right direction on some of that. Which isn't to say that I necessarily think it's definitely going to click, but I think that there's movement in the right direction.
One thing to keep in mind about all of this is that we're missing some pretty crucial context, of course, which is how good are these other teams, right? And at the moment, the top two teams in the West are San Antonio and Monterey Bay. San Antonio is undefeated. Monterey Bay has one loss. It is to San Antonio. Now, Orange County is a little bit further down the table, but their one loss is to Monterey Bay. So it is possible that what we've seen is a Roots team that is still gelling, as you guys put it on the blog, still coming together, because you got a lot of guys who showed up at different parts of the offseason, has just had to play three of the better teams in the West. And, you know, they're not capable of putting what will be their best foot forward now, right now, because they're not yet a unit. And that can take some time, and it's not a big deal, because at the end of the day, 8 out of the 12 teams in the West go to the playoffs. And they don't have to be much better to be eighth, as we've seen. You know, they're just going to have to improve a little bit. And we see these moments of magic, so we know that there's something there to work with. But obviously something does still have to change, because they haven't really looked competitive for 90 minutes yet in any game, which is a bit of that's a bit of a concern, I think.
To add to the optimism, if you do beat Las Vegas Lights in match week 4 and other results go the Roots way, you could leapfrog 4 teams, and then that's your top 8 right there. So still very early days in the season.
Which is both a great point and a great segue to talking about next week against Las Vegas Lights, who have one win and one loss. They blanked Tampa Bay Rowdies, which is unbelievable to me. You know, having watched this league for 4 years, the idea that the Las Vegas Lights would, is it 4 years? It might be 5 years now. I don't really know.
This is year 5.
Time doesn't really function in the way that it used to, so far as I can tell. But having watched this league for, I guess, 5 years now, the idea of the Lights blanking the Tampa Bay Rowdies is just foreign to me. But they did that in week 1 and then lost 3-2 against New Mexico United. After and then took a week off. So they're coming off of a bit of a break on their trip to Oakland. Old friend Johnny Rodriguez does have a goal so far this season. He's one of three players to score. I honestly can't tell you anything else about this roster.
I cannot encourage you highly enough to go and watch the highlights of the New Mexico United Las Vegas Lights game. You will immediately feel good about the Roots' chances against them. And especially as a counter-attacking team. The first two goals for New Mexico United are both comedies of error. The first one, the goalkeeper is under significant pressure. There's probably 9 dudes in his penalty box. And I think he probably wants to clear it long. But he plays it short because it's the only option he has. And he plays it to his own, you know, central defender or central midfielder at the edge of the 18-yard box, who preposterously tries to backheel the ball, like no-look backheel the ball. He plays it directly into an attacking player's feet, who runs to the goal line, puts a ball in that bounces to the edge of the 6-yard box directly to a Vegas defender who mishits his clearance and bounces the ball directly into the path of an unmarked man 10 yards outside of the center of goal. The second New Mexico goal is a shot from the top of the box that is deflected, rolls slowly towards the penalty spot, and the defender who deflected the ball decides to try to box out the New Mexico man, so that the keeper can come out and claim the ball, only the keeper doesn't realize that, so he doesn't come off his line. So the New Mexico player runs around him, taps the ball to the left to another unmarked man who shoots the ball in uncontested. And it is like, in both goals, more than half of the Vegas team is like surrender cobraing after the ball goes in, because they can't believe that their teammates fucked up this badly. It's like if Glinton is trying to talk the Roots attack into pressing to force mistakes and turnovers, he's going to be showing them this footage, and he's like, you're all fired if you can't do it to these idiots. you know, Vegas equalized on two pretty good goals. Johnny Rodriguez put in a cross under significant pressure. You know, a classic Johnny Rodriguez finish. He's at full sprint. Ball comes in. He just like leaps forward and pokes it in. And then their equalizer in the 90th minute is like a, you know, outside the box worldie from Joe Giao. And they concede on a walk-off borderline Olympico in the 95th minute. Like, it is going in. The keeper can only parry it. He parries it onto his own crossbar, and it is in the process of spinning back into the goal when it's, like, tapped in by a New Mexico guy. So it's like he didn't even need to do that. It was probably a goal anyway. But there are goals to be had against New Mexico, notwithstanding their shutout of Tampa Bay. This is the most confident I've been since week one with an opponent. Setting aside the fact that there is just so much possibility for pain from Johnny Rodriguez. Sorry, go ahead, Ivan.
I just wanted to add that New Mexico United also got some revenge for the playoff loss last season with this result too. As much as you can avenge a playoff loss in the regular season, so there's that bit of motivation for sure. And I guess we'll see a bit more about what the training sessions were like last season between Neville Hackshaw and Johnny Rodriguez in this matchup.
Oh, damn. Go ahead, John.
I'm fucking terrified.
Yeah, well, that's...
to our listeners at home, John is wearing a Tottenham Hotspur jersey. And I just want to be clear that John is scared not because he thinks we're going to lose, but because he knows how much it's going to hurt if we lose because of Johnny Rodriguez. And that's just him being a Spurs fan.
I will tell you, we don't all have
to bear this pain with John.
There are a lot of similarities between the two organizations in the way these two teams lose. I will tell you that. I've seen a lot of similar movies in my time, okay? Following both of these fucking teams. All right. So prepare for the worst and then be glad it doesn't happen. That is how you be a Roots and a Spurs fan.
Wow.
Okay.
Roots pod after dark.
Wow. I don't think
we're Spurs. We're like Southampton.
Oh, that's, I think I'd almost rather be Spurs.
You're probably more accurate.
Crystal Palace.
Yeah, I could buy Crystal Palace.
In the mix, Palace would make the playoffs if there were playoffs. If there were 16 playoff teams.
All right, I feel confident saying that we need to make some kind of adjustment going into this next game. So I'm going to ask you guys for your predictions, but I want those predictions to include what adjustment you'd like to see on the pitch. In addition to how you think the Oakland Roots are going to win against Las Vegas. John, let me start with you, because your face that I see right now suggests you're really champing at the bit to tell me what you think.
Well, I'm going to steal what Peter talked about, really forcing Las Vegas into mistakes, having that high pressure to force them in the difficult moments and create goal scoring opportunities. I think if it is a weak point for them, I mean, then good. You can see by the numbers that Gavin's trying to build this defensively sound group that doesn't necessarily want the ball all the time and wants to hit teams in transition with long balls, quick passes, one touch shooting. So I want to see more of that. And, you know, that's what I'm looking for in this game. I'm also looking for them to lock up Johnny Rodriguez, because I think he's coming in here angry, man, and we'll see how he does. I mean, is he one of those players that gets more locked in when they're fucking pissed off? I mean, he has a lot to play for. It's an intriguing matchup, especially just the, you know, four games into the season. I'm sure Johnny saw that date on the calendar and was just, you know, just so eager to get to the Coliseum. It's going to be an interesting night for him. I'm sure he has a lot of emotions walking into that Coliseum, just thinking what could have been.
Yep. He wants that Coliseum goal. The former face of the Oakland Roots, like, he's got a lot to look forward to in this game. And the Roots have to be on high alert. So looking at the defense and the goalkeeper, Las Vegas Lights, as Peter mentioned, that they had a rough game against New Mexico. And I think one thing you can point to is the youth goalkeeper, 24 years old, in the back line of Singer, 25 years old, Gartig, 22 years old, and Nate Jones, 23 years old. So when you're facing that youthful defense, they're going to have a lot of energy. They're going to have a lot of stamina. But that's when you have to play smart, you know, try to bait them into some fouls so you can get them into early yellow card trouble. That was one of the things that the Roots did right. They got Osorio, the makeshift right back for San Antonio, into an early yellow card. And I don't think that was his out-and-out position. So I was hoping they would capitalize on that more. So hopefully that's something they review in film and in training, and that they can capitalize on that matchup, potential mismatch with, you know, the speedy options they have up top. And of course, Armanakis, who at points last match, he was reduced to taking a lot of shots, and because there's no other options at times. So hopefully he's going to have more opportunities to exploit those gaps in that back three should they line up that way. And I think that the midfield duo of Gibson and Gomez, I think that hopefully this game there's a bit more understanding of we can't both be defensive midfielders all the time. We need to find our opportunities to get into the mix. And while we saw some signs of that, I think that having one of them hang back and have one of them be more adventurous and help out Armanakis in midfield, that could be an adjustment.
I want to see what I think is the starting lineup. And I think that's Wilson, Sinisterra, and Dom up top. And that, I think, you know, those were, I mean, Sinisterra less so. Sinisterra was around from last season, but Wilson and Dom are guys that they targeted and went out and got. I think they're intended to start. I think that Dom is intended to play as a forward, and I want to see them out there with Armanakis and see them go for it. You know, it's far enough into the season. There's really no excuses. It will be almost like a month since, you know, the end of preseason, and they need to be, you know, they need to be playing the starters. I'm fine with Gibson and Gomez out there. I thought it's interesting that Gibson and Gomez, like, just don't come off. Like, they were not substituted even when the Roots were chasing, even though they're both kind of defensive players. I think that they're who we're running with in central midfield. I kind of don't see other changes on the back line. I think Mohamed might start over Riley just because Riley came off kind of early last week, and I think he may be nursing something. So that's what I see from the lineup. We're not doing score predictions yet. You asked for something else.
No, I had hoped that there would be score predictions, but we just got on a roll there with our adjustment predictions, so...
3-1 Roots.
All right.
This is the first win I've predicted this season.
No, didn't you pick them to win the opening game?
I probably did.
Yeah, I think you did.
But I don't know. I like this matchup. I don't like our odds of keeping someone entirely off the board, but I think this is probably our best offense versus someone else's defense matchup so far. I mean, that's based on really limited information. Vegas only played 2 games, but, I don't know. I believe in it. So 3-1 Roots.
I mean, the limited information, though, is probably useful. And it sort of informs my thinking about this, too, right? You know that this is a team that is probably a little shaky on confidence because they understand what kind of goals they just gave up. And I think obviously they've had a week off to fix the errors, but they've also had a week off to think about it. I think you want to make sure that stays in the back of their minds, press them from the front the whole game. Vegas has had less than 40% possession in both of their matches. And, you know, I'm on record as saying I don't know how much you can take from the possession stat in the USL because so much of it is dependent on game state. But it does seem I'd say that doesn't necessarily hold at the margins. And I think there might be reason to believe that Vegas is in one of those margins. And I'd love to see the Oakland Roots just take advantage of that. Hold on to the ball. Just dominate the game from the beginning. And look, if you give up a counterattack goal, whatever, you know that you're going to have chances, that you've got guys who can put together really special moments. I'm seeing Oakland 2-1 get off the schneid. And feel better about this home stretch. John, Ivan, you guys want to chime in with score predictions, or do you want to just hold your keep your powder dry right now?
You actually got the score I was thinking. Given the state of the defense and they're trying to improve game by game, I'm not quite ready to call a clean sheet for the Oakland Roots yet, so we'll expect maybe the one conceded. Let's be optimistic there. But with the weaknesses in defense for Las Vegas and being at home, I think that things will come together a little bit more offensively. I'll stick with 2-1 as well.
I like 2-1. Wilson, Sinisterra for the goals.
You're all cowards. Absolute cowards.
The Oakland Roots back at the Oakland Coliseum. How about that? Back at the Oakland Coliseum for a second straight week. This time against Las Vegas Lights, the second of three in this homestand. That's this Saturday. Is it the Saturday? Shoot, I don't even know if it's Saturday.
Saturday, 7 p.m. The next couple of home games after that, Rhode Island and then Orange County later in April. Those will be 1 p.m. games, but this one for Vegas, 7 p.m.
We'll be back after this next match. We'll break it down, hopefully talk about a win. And until then. Fuck down, try.